Burn Line Podcast. The burn line on a well-crafted cigar is straight and sharp as a razor, much like our wit and wisdom. And what is up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, over the age of 21, you are listening to Burnline Podcast, coming to you not live from the hot box, the smoky back room where deals are struck and fortunes are made, adjacent to the Phoenix Lounge, nestled amongst the complex of rooms that comprise Tobacco on Main Street. I'm your host, Johnny Midas.
Namo Fumo.
I'm Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
And we smoke cigars.
Yes.
And, drink coffee.
And talk some shit.
This week, we have got the Don Pepin Garcia Series JJ 20th Anniversary 2025. This is what we're smoking. This is the box, and I will do some close-ups for you guys. Absolutely gorgeous box. I mean, this is right up there with the best of Fernandez, the San Latano factory, the best of Fuente. I mean, not as fancy as some Fuente stuff, but the level of quality. Just really surprised with this white lacquer, like how much effort they put into it. And the red stripe, it's just phenomenal. And then you have this push-button clasp, and
voila.
There we go. So we showed this off last week, and we are smoking it this week. So this is the big cool thing, is that is a coffin box with a single Solomon. So there's 16 Toros, and then this says limited edition 2025 Solomon 7.25x57 burnt into the lid. And here's what's interesting. All of these Toros look the same as the Solomon. However, there is one difference. This is a really cool touch. This little piece of foam they put under this part when it's in the box, like, because of the shape of a Solomon. So it's not like that in the box. Just a neat little
pillow.
Yeah, I gave it a little pillow, just a neat little touch. But here's what's interesting. This ribbon is not the same on the Solomon. I don't know for sure because I haven't taken this guy apart, and I'm not going to take him apart.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, intentionally or otherwise. I'm not smoking him today, but this ribbon is different from the ribbon that is on the Toros.
Oh, God.
Also taped to the wrapper, apparently. Right? Which, it makes sense, because the Solomon is a lot fatter. But if you compare this to the Toro, you can see, like, maybe it's the same amount of ribbon.
It's the same. It's just perspective.
It isn't. Because if you look at the overlap, it's the same. Maybe. But it looks like there. It looks like this was cut an extra quarter inch or half inch longer. But point being, they did put a lot of detail into this. There you go, Angel.
Thank you.
And Tom.
Thanks, sir.
All right, so fair disclosure. You guys all smoked this ahead of time? Or you both smoked this ahead of time?
Yeah.
Okay.
We did.
I smoked the rest of them. I smoked a lot of these. Actually.
You guys see that?
Yeah. I smoked the shit out of this cigar. And the main reason for that is I was trying to find something to talk about. So I'm hoping you guys can help me with that on this show. But
by the way, this looks really good in the cello. It's got like that clear.
Yeah, the crystal finish or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know what the official name of it.
Yeah, but it does look pretty good. It looks even better out of the cello. And so,
of course,
this is a Corojo 99 Rosado wrapper, and
That is a Rosado. This is like this looks like a real Rosado.
We'll talk a little bit more about this cigar after we start puffing on it. So why don't we go ahead and get it cut and lit? Okay. Starting with the cutting, I've got my Freestyle Live, a close-ended double guillotine cutter. And Angel, what are you? What are you cutting with?
Trying to get this off first before I cut. It's like, fuck, man.
Is it on there tight?
Yeah, it really is.
Unlike the Salamone.
Hold on, standby. There we go. Jesus.
Yeah, don't forget to take the foot ribbon off.
Yeah, this is synthetic nylon, and that will, A, taste gross and ruin your cigar.
Well, hold on to that, because I'm going to compare that to the Salamone.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Test my theory. All right. So you got the Craftsman's Bench, yes, opening a double guillotine. Tom has got the Colibri Deep V.
As always.
Stop it.
As always. All right, so we have three different styles of cutter. The official cutting is brought to you by Lord Baltimore Distributors. The official cutting is brought to you by Lord Baltimore Distributors. Featuring proprietary blends available nowhere else, Lord Baltimore Distributors are meticulously crafted boutique cigars made in small batches for every palate. Lord Baltimore Distributors. When only the best will do. And as always, we remind you to clip that cigar with authority. No limp-wristed cutting allowed. Double clip again. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, the perfect cut can be...
I don't like... It's not. Look at the bottom blade. They just don't leave enough space.
I agree.
Now, the Perdomo all-metal... Close-ended double. That one I love. It leaves enough space. But that one, unfortunately, I think is a scratch. I'm going to have to stop using that.
I'm going to bring my Monte Cristo, see if you'd like that one.
Well, Monte Cristo sells some real trash that has the Monte Cristo brand on it, like plastic and everything. Mm. And then they have some stuff that is really way up here.
Yeah, I have an all-metal perfect cutter.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I dislike about Monte Cristo branded stuff is they're not, you never know. You have to look at each thing individually, you know? So it's not like it's all, like all the ST DuPonts, attention to detail and expensive.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not Monte Cristo branded stuff. Of course they don't actually make it, but.
They're coming out with some fun toys in the next round.
Yeah. Which I'm okay with, honestly.
I liked a lot of their... Like the sword...
sword ashtray.
Yeah, the...
I got one of those.
I got one of those for Greg.
Nice.
All right, let's get these lit up. I've got my ST DuPont double flame, flat flame, gold-plated Johnny Midas lighter. Angel, you've got...
Vertigo Quad Torch.
Vertigo Quad. Tom?
The Jetline Quad.
And the official lighting is brought to you by 2C Premium Coffee. The official lighting is brought to you by 2C Premium Coffee. Keep your day fueled with delicious coffee from 2C Premium Coffee. Featuring select beans from Bali, Kenya, Ethiopia, and around the world, 2C Premium utilizes continual roasting, so you are always getting a truly fresh cup of premium coffee. 2C Premium Coffee, morning made us. And as always, we remind you, toasted, not roasted. Treat that cigar with love and respect it deserves, and it will return the flavor.
What about you guys? I thought this, on the first one I smoked, that my lips were burning a bit much.
It
and
was
now
weird.
Now this happened twice in a row, I'm thinking, is there a little bit of, you know, somebody just waved the Tabasco lid around it or something?
I don't know. So the two, this is a Nicaraguan puro. I expect Nicaraguans to be strong. That's their shtick, kind of. There's two tobaccos that are highlighted in this. Only two, I should say. Mm-hmm. And that is the Corojo 99 Rosado, Sun Grown Rosado wrapper, which is not super spicy. Corojo 99 isn't spicy at all, really, but Nicaraguan, depending on where it's grown, can be. And the other is the Peladoro tobacco on the inside. Very expensive Cuban hybrid Genesis,
heirloom,
whatever.
Yeah.
Neither of which are known for being
crazy spicy.
Crazy, yeah. I found the initial smokes to be strong and spicy, but especially spicy on like the lips, like Tom was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it coats my palate and my tongue. We'll see a little bit more as we go along. But as we sort of prepare for initial tasting notes, a little bit about this Don Pepin Garcia Series JJ 20th Anniversary 2025. So the Series JJ is the initials of what, the son and the daughter?
I think so, yeah.
And so the Series JJ was like made for them, and this is the 20th anniversary of the Series JJ, so this is the Special Edition 2025. The best part about all of this is the fucking box. It's absolutely gorgeous. This is like, that save this, cool, humidor yeah. it. Also, this is pretty affordable. This is a fairly approachable cigar. And in case you don't know, Don Pepin Garcia is a My Father brand. And of course, you can just tell by the branding all over it. Everything from the bands to the engraving on the top of the box to the quality control sticker. It all just screams My Father graphic design. Super well done, I think. Love on the band. I don't know if you saw the American flag and the Statue of Liberty
mm-hmm.
on the one side. And then it's got the
Cuban flag.
The seal. And the seal is Nicaragua and Cuban flag, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, a little heritage all grateful tied together
for their
there.
Past, present, and future.
Mm-hmm. And what really sold me on getting the whole box, first of all, so it's 17 cigars. It was like, I think it was $430 or something total.
Okay.
So, you know, that's not that expensive. All right, so for a special edition, decent chunk of tobacco. But what sold me was the box is fucking gorgeous, and then it has the special Salamone in the coffin box, and so I bought a box. And it's a My Father product. Who doesn't like a My Father product? If I were buying the individual sticks, that's a really interesting use case. Tom, of course, you're a retailer. If this was on your shelf, first of all, how many people are going to fight you over the Salamone?
Everybody that sees it.
Who's going to fight you over the box?
Everybody that sees it.
Yeah, a lot of folks, right?
Yeah.
Because you can use it as a humidor. It's not a huge one. Right. But you can get 20 sticks in there, no problem.
Passable desktop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would look great on my office desk, you know. It's not super deep. But you can also fit almost any stick. You could fit a Cañones in there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know?
It's large, these dimensions. So I think those are interesting like features that are slash drawbacks for the retailer. But as far as the individual stick goes, My Father has a pretty good following, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Not a cult following, but kind of. You know, the judge, especially.
Yeah, the judge.
And so this is just in this weird spot where it's competing with other My Father products.
Mm-hmm. But it's a My Father.
Yeah. And it priced itself into an interesting spot, too. We'll talk about that more with value. So, graphic design, presentation. Fucking love it. I think it's classic, classy, cigar, big man type of artwork. Old world, I call it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, pre-Victorian. Maybe Victorian, yeah.
I don't know, I'm not a fucking art critic, Angel, but...
Yeah, you are.
But...
Definitely looks like it's from the Gilded Age.
Yes.
Gilded Age, for sure. The way cigars should look, right? Pre-fucking revolution. So, forget this brutalist, mid-century, communist bullshit.
You gotta
put the pinky
out.
Pinky's out, boys. Okay, so Tom brought some whiskey. Before we have that, we need to talk about how the cigar tastes before the whiskey.
Before the whiskey.
So why don't we go around the horn? Angel, tell me your thoughts, initial tasting thoughts on this cigar.
So, it is a tad spicy, not like, oh my god, my mouth's on fire, but there's like a hint of cayenne, but not exactly cayenne. And it's not hateful. And then there's a like a kind of a just a hint of acridity as it's coming over into out the nostril. I don't know if you noticed that on the retro.
Yeah. Can I expand on both of those?
Yeah, absolutely.
The first one I would say is the spiciness is in the back. Mm-hmm. Pepper is usually on the tip of your tongue. There's not much of that, but the back of your palate seems super coated. I don't know if I would call it acridness or acridity. Yeah, I think it's spicy. I think it's the same spicy.
Yeah, it's just
as you retro, that's really sensitive parts, like your adenoids and all of that.
Yeah.
And it definitely, you know, it's like, well, what's the fucking difference? Psychologically, because acridity is often from, like, tobacco that should be aged more or something. Mm-hmm. That's not what this is. Not acrid smoke.
No, that's what I said. It's
but it has the same feeling. It has the same effect on the back of your throat.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good call out.
Yeah. And then there's something else. I haven't pegged it yet. As it's coming out the nostril, there's something else there. There's like a hint that's like trying to come out.
But none of those are really flavors. Do you have any flavors?
No, I don't have like an actual flavor at the moment.
Okay.
I'm getting something I want to call grass, but it's not grass.
Okay.
It's definitely.
It might be in the same wheelhouse.
And it's kind of like a dry sweetness
mm-hmm.
that's in there. The pepper on the lips is different than the pepper from the smoke.
Totally different, yeah. Yeah, agree.
But they do kind of blend.
They do play together. They're in the same zip code. So I was going to say the only tasting note that I have is sweet tobacco, which is really similar to hay or grass. Mm-hmm. There is sort of like the way that cayenne pepper has a bitter flavor. Cayenne pepper in the back of your throat mm-hmm. and back of your palate. But there's more like black pepper on the lips.
Mm-hmm.
Strength 6.5-7 feels like it could get stronger. We'll see. What do you think for strength?
Yeah, I'm at more of a 6.
Yeah, I'm definitely at the 6 point. And I also want to say there's some kind of remnant of some kind of nut buried deep in it too.
I think you might be right. There is a little nuttiness there.
Yeah, I was thinking the
same. It's like at the very tail end, and if you look for it, poof, goes away.
Now, interestingly, although it's fairly strong. And I don't know. It's hard to tell because of the spiciness. It sticks. It stays. And then when you breathe in air, it's spicier. But the smoke this is not full bodied. The smoke body is very mid to me. It's kind of light, actually. It's hard to feel in your mouth.
Secondhand's kind of neutral.
Secondhand is very neutral.
Which is interesting.
This is not a stinky cigar.
My father makes enjoyable products. for the most part.
for the most part. I don't think I've ever smoked at my father I didn't like.
I definitely don't go out of my way to smoke them.
It's interesting. Me either. I was just thinking about it. Like, I love the graphic design, and mm-hmm. I like their cigars, but, you know, I'm a milder cigar guy.
Snob.
I'm also a snob. May or may not be really.
They make one of the best examples of buy a low-cost cigar and park it for 2 years, the El Centurion.
Mm-hmm.
Get the little Coronas or Robustos, park that for 2 years, keep it properly humidified. You are then smoking a phenomenal, phenomenal cigar.
I thought the Centurion was only available at events. Is that, or did it start out that way?
Who knows?
I know I've gotten them on shelves before.
They are very confusing.
Yeah.
Brand to watch and follow.
Yeah, I've gotten them on shelves before, but, you know, retailers get good cigars wherever they can. That doesn't mean it didn't start out as an event pack or something. Same thing with the Perdomo, what is it, Fresca? That's another one that ages really well.
It's a great stick, can't buy it.
Well. I'm pretty sure I can, but not supposed to.
Yeah, it's one of those great giveaways, man. It's like, give me that Fresca.
Okay, Tom, why don't you hand me that bottle? I'll show it off. Tell me what we're drinking today.
We are drinking a Shield Egg.
Now, say that again.
Shield Egg single malt Scotch whiskey from Islay. I think it's a 12-year-old.
It's Scottish, so it's pronounced Shield Egg.
I was gonna say next time, let me try to pronounce it before, because that's not
the,
how I would pronounce it.
Have the Mexican pronounce the Scottish.
Shield Egg is a wonderful little company that not a lot of people have tried, and it used to be available locally only at Total Wine and More, but they have now expanded past that, and it's one of those things where when you tried to find out something about it, you were amazed by how little there was about it.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, I don't know if this still stands true, but I was chatting with a guy who somehow convinced me he was in a position to know that this was mislabeled for Callens.
Interesting.
Rebranded, because once they lose track of the date or whatever it is, well,
they sell it.
Now it's a coin toss.
Yeah.
Whatever. But it is delightful. They make many different varieties, all in the under 30, 35-ish range.
Which is a great price for Scotch.
It is. Great price. So this is a medium body, but very smooth. A lot of notes of caramel in it.
Smells fruity.
All their stuff is very, very pleasant.
From the Loch of the Herring.
Loch Ness.
All right.
Oh.
Sláinte.
Cheers. Salud.
Kachinka.
Whatever. Bottoms up, boys. Actually, not bottoms up, because it's not an Ecuadorian wrapper.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty... So, this is interesting, because it definitely has the, peaty, salty, salt spray Islay flavor. You can tell it's an Islay, but at the same time, it has like a mellow, honey, slightly fruity overtones that is usually associated with like Highlands.
Yeah,
a little caramel.
No iodine.
Yeah, there's a little iodine.
Is there?
There's a little. Not like Lafroy.
Yeah, Jesus.
That's very drinkable, Tom.
Isn't it?
That's a great little choice. I can't, and that price point is super approachable.
Good job, Scotland.
Good job, Scotland. Good job, Tom.
I wasn't even going to try it.
Yeah, well, that's like me trying to talk with a Spanish accent. I mean, I can get kind of close. You can get kind of close to Scottish.
I mean, the last time you tried a Cuban accent, you sounded Italian.
There's no such thing as a Cuban accent. Is there a Cuban accent?
Yes, sir.
See,
yes,
that's
sir.
The problem. I've never heard it.
Oh, yeah. I had a lady that worked for me as a receptionist who I hired because Espanol was the primary, but she was from Puerto Rico. In 5 years, she ran into 50 people that spoke Spanish she couldn't understand.
That's true. That Puerto Rico has a more drifted Spanish than a lot of Spanish countries. I worked with a Puerto Rican lady, and the slang was bizarre. So, like, biche, I think. Like, so in Puerto Rico, it means, like, prostitute. Mm. But I think it actually means, like, bobby hairpin or something.
Yeah. You know what a bus is in Puerto Rican?
Mm-mm.
Wawa.
Huh. Yeah, it's stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
this one's like, fuck.
When you're doing the common everyday speech.
Yeah.
Language is interesting.
Yes, it is.
Ever evolving.
Well, I mean, you know what they say. England and America are two countries separated by a common language.
Plus, like, Puerto Rico was a fucking port. Like, everybody was there. Everybody.
Hmm. Yeah. You know what I listened to last week? I listened to, a synopsis of the history of Christopher Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
That dude was a piece of shit. And did you know that he actually, his career ended being arrested and taken back to Spain in chains? And that most of the shitty stuff that he did was actually illegal and the crown didn't support it?
He was largely a privateer.
Yeah.
Had some successes.
Well, he had no oversight.
In regards to lining his wallet, but he had a lot more failures.
But you know what's funny? It's like, people defend him. I'm like, why?
But he had
There's no reason for you to defend him.
Well, people defend him because of this stupid culture war bullshit that keeps people from being able
to
think rationally.
They're like, happy Columbus Day. I'm like, dude, he has nothing to do with North America. Fuck off. This is the same.
Okay, so...
You'll piss off Italians if you say that.
So...
I don't care. I'll piss them. I'll fuck them.
So, you can talk about, like, slavery and Christopher Columbus, but... Okay, man of the times, whatever.
I can get past that.
I mean, sure we wouldn't copy that. There's a lot of shit they did back then that is evil, right?
Yeah.
But he was buying fucking 9-year-olds and selling them to his soldiers.
Right.
For sex, apparently. Now, here's where it gets fucking weird. He kept detailed journals, and we have them. Except for his first voyage journal. That one, the Crown confiscated, and they locked up, and then like 20 years later, Columbus's like first mate or first captain, who hated him, was granted access and copied it and published it. And that's where we know about the sex camps and slavery and stuff like that. And so there is some doubt as to whether or not he was fucking lying because he had it in for Columbus and wanted to fuck it. That being said, true things sound true, and everything he's describing makes sense for everything that it's contextualized within, and I think it's true. And he hated Columbus for a reason. It wasn't because of, like, political jealousy or anything like that. He was a free man. Columbus was locked up, didn't get his pension and everything that he was promised or his percentage share of whatever. So this guy didn't have much to gain from doing this. He hated Columbus because Columbus was a fucking, you know, fascist prick who, you know, was selling girls into slavery. And the queen heard about this. And, like, that is not limited to the journal.
Right.
This is other historical sources. Right,
first-hand accounts.
Yeah, and that's what he got recalled. He was a bag of dicks.
Yeah, and smashing infants against rocks.
Didn't hear about that in the history I was listening to.
Yeah. He wasn't the first one here anyway. Eric the Red was here. There was 600 years
before. Many that. Europeans in mainland North America and South America before that guy, and arguably Indians as well.
It was all, yes.
And Indians from India.
From India, yeah.
Yeah, not no, Indians. It was,
oh, yeah. Don't get me started on Rapa Nui.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
No, but it was all propaganda because, you know, he was actually, he married a Portuguese noblewoman, and he just couldn't get the Portuguese crown to support him. So he said, fuck you, and went to Spain, and they wouldn't support him either until he found out they didn't care about gold. They cared about religion. And so then he changed his entire story to, I want to go to the New World to spread Christianity, and also all the gold that I find can fund a crusade to take back Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he had the money.
So. Yeah, well, thank you for clarifying that, because when it comes from somebody like me, it's like, oh, you're just, you know, because your history. It's like, I'm not making it up and I'm not being a bitch about it. It's like,
well, the Mexicans weren't affected by Columbus.
I know, but it's like, as somebody on the native side.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, you're compromised. Yeah. No,
it wasn't necessarily his fault, but he did start the stampede of Europeans that did the same thing.
It was going to happen regardless. It's not that Columbus did it. It was going to happen regardless, whether it was Columbus or not.
They were trying. The Spaniards were actually, like, this was the best version of themselves. If you read the history of what they did in Africa, it's like a shocking level of brutality. And, of course, the Spanish Inquisition, you know, like, the brutality was insane. And then here's the political...
What they do to tobacco still.
Yeah. Yeah. The political, what was going on at the time, they had just finally defeated the Saracens and kicked the Muslims out. And so they were, you know, the Spanish Inquisition was part and parcel of this. We're all going to believe the same fucking thing, you know, or you're a heretic, because the country won't survive.
Yeah.
We will fracture into 100 little, you know, just like fucking Germany, where, like, the Protestants and the Lutherans and the Genevans and whatever, they're just fighting back and forth to take property. And meanwhile, who suffers? Everybody suffers economically from it.
The Jews.
Yeah. And they got the worst.
And even to this day, I know it's not popular because it doesn't make mainstream news. Even to this day, the Spanish are oppressing people.
Well,
in Spain.
I don't want to get to you know, modern politics per se, but anyway, so enough about that, but, you know, history is interesting, and then...
And it's ugly anyway. It's
I mean, history is humans, but...
It's always written by the winners.
Right, correct.
Okay, but that I'm going to challenge that, because most of the history that we have actually isn't. Most of the history that gets published is actually protest history, the vast majority of it. However, how on earth did we end up with this propaganda around Columbus? Like, literally, we went to school and we were taught, oh, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. He discovered America. And I'm like, none of that is true.
No.
He didn't even discover America.
No.
He landed on a bunch of islands. Like, that's Hispaniola correct. Was the biggest
He never thing made he found. It to mainland anyway.
Never made it to mainland. He was horrible at his job, got recalled. They gave him, like, one last commission. Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm really going to find the passage to India this time. Failed, shipwrecked. Had to be rescued by the new governor of what was it, Hispaniola or Honduras? I forget.
Yeah, it has to be Hispaniola.
But,
which is what? DR?
Yeah, DR Haiti. Whatever the island was. Had to go rescue him. And then, they wouldn't have survived if the natives didn't give them food, basically.
Which is most of and the settlers, anyway.
The sailors were such dicks. I mean, stealing women to rape them. They were such dicks that the natives stopped helping them. Well, Christopher Columbus had an almanac that predicted an eclipse, and he told them, my God is very angry with you for not helping us, and he's going to turn the moon to blood. It was a lunar eclipse, and it happened, and so they started feeding him again. Otherwise, they all would have died, and then the governor that replaced him was sitting on his ass on purpose, just because fuck you, Columbus, because nobody liked him, and then eventually rescued him. But rescued him, you know, like, to send him back to Spain to, you know, live in disgrace the rest. And then somehow that ended up in school.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that non-biased history lesson.
Yeah, totally not. You know it's non-biased because I don't give a shit. I just heard it.
No, well, like I said, as shitty as it sounds, it's good when it comes from a Caucasian, like, bringing the truth, you know, about it. Like, I don't understand. It's dumb. Either way.
I don't even know, like, how did you become... It was propaganda, though.
Why do we even have a Columbus, Ohio? Like, that's weird to me. But anyway.
He discovered Ohio.
Didn't hear about that? That's right.
Who knows? It's probably not named after Christopher.
It is, because they have a big-ass statue of him.
Do they?
On the Capitol, right?
They got a lot of Italians there, then.
Yeah.
Must be. Yeah. All right, so...
history lesson.
Yeah, like, back to cigars. Don Pepin Garcia, Series JJ. Why don't we go ahead and do our socials and surprises?
Let's go.
So, as usual, if you think we add value to the cigar smoking hobby, please like, share, subscribe, comment, whatever you can do to interact online. And that really helps us out. Also, please contact us, burnlinepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you like or don't like about the show.
Yeah.
And we would love... your input. Shout out to John Bretz for subscribing on YouTube. One new comment on Spotify for creators this week. Pretty good. And a bunch of you guys on LinkedIn. So I am going to miss some of you guys, but let's go ahead and ignore my time limit for today.
This is actually a good pairing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is pretty good.
They help each other.
Janda Royal. Thank you for following on Insta.
The Grams.
The Cigar Guy, 17350. Mr. Jess Patrick, Mako 12699, Cigar Life 66, Omega Vice 2, Katie Hanko, and more. Thank you for following us on Instagram. And as a reward and an incentive, we have a little contest for you guys. So every once in a while we do a giveaway, and I got something kind of cool right here in this unassuming little white box inside of this guy. Look what I've got. This is a ashtray. So this is an all-metal construction ashtray. It doesn't hold a ton of ash. This is just a couple cigar, but it's deep enough. You can put it on your porch, and the ash shouldn't blow everywhere with two built-in cigar rests. Very classy, a little kind of like mid-century modern looking, but not a bad little ashtray. So we're going to post some rules on Insta for you. Go to Instagram, Burnline Podcast. Everywhere you go, we're just at Burnline Podcast. And enter to win. And one lucky winner will get this all-metal construction ashtray. So there you go. And as always, we appreciate everything that you do for us to sort of keep this hobby going and sharing it with you. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will do our tobacconist tip of the week. Mm-hmm. Don't go away. Tip of the week with Angel Solorio.
All right, tobacconist tip of the week. It's getting cold out. I know I mentioned this usually every fall, and we're in that weird spot where it's like, hey, it's cold as shit, and then it's hot as shit again. So, like earlier this week. So, anyways, if you're ordering cigars through the mail online, which comes through the mail, however it gets here, you know, they're either going to be caught super cold or super hot.
Or both.
Yeah, both. Jesus. We've ran into that how many times on the show?
Yeah.
So,
A few times.
So when you get your cigars, bring them in. You know, if you're cold, they're cold. Bring them in. Let them rest before you completely, like, tear open the box, throw them in the humidor. Don't do that. Just let them chill on the counter for maybe like a day, you know, and then open it up, throw them in your humidor. You don't want to damage your cigars from, like, those extreme weather changes or climate changes, you know, from being outside to inside. So, just something to rescue your cigar. Because what one of the biggest thing is pretty much wrapper pop. I think that's with either extreme.
Yeah, and I mean, it's safe to say, like, whether you're dealing with extreme heat or extreme cold or both, it's slow. Just go slow.
Right.
Bring them back up to temperature slowly. Another thing that I do that's... There's two things I do when storing cigars that are a little different that I do recommend. Number one, humidity between 60 and 65%. You have to remember that these leaves exist in the wild, and we've been making cigars long before we had electricity.
Yeah.
And they'll be fine. Over-humidified cigars suck, and this like 78%, whatever, it's too high. I think 70 is too high. Above 70, I think, is too high.
One of the advantages is if you do keep them in that lower range of 60 to 65, they are less likely to blow up on you. Because it's generally, you have something that's a high humidity, you take it out into a new environment, and the moisture just says,
You got to remember,
there's the end of your cigar.
Yeah, you got to remember, these are still decomposing.
Yes.
Because it is organic material, so anything living... You know, lives and dies.
Fermented organic material.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing that I do that's a little different, like I have a refrigerator, and I can't tell you how many places I've read, like 60, 62, 64 degrees. Dude, and then you're going to light it on fire? No. So I keep mine at like 76, my refrigerator, something like that. And then in the summer, I kind of bring that temp up. You know, if I'm going to smoke outside, I don't want to go 20 degrees.
And not a bad idea to, if you have the time, take your cigar out of your storage container and put it in the environment you're going to smoke it for about an hour.
Yep.
It'll help it before you fire it up.
Yep, that is a great tip as well. So, thank you for that tobacconist tip of the week. So this Shield Egg, I think it actually pairs really well with this cigar. Another accidental pairing from the Expert Palettes at Burnline Podcast.
Love it when that happens.
Love it when that happens. Love it when a good plan comes together.
That's right.
But let's do some tasting notes. We are smoking the Don Pepin Garcia Series JJ 20th Anniversary 2025 Special Edition Toro. This is a 6.5 by 52, kind of a true Toro. Angel, where are we at?
I'm honestly still about the same.
I'm not getting any new flavor notes other than it's better now with the very small sip of the scotch. It brings out the flavors I was getting before, but there have been no new flavors yet.
Right.
Almost finished the first third.
And no, the spicy / acridity kind of went away. It mellowed out. I'm still at about a 6, 6.5 maybe for strength.
I think the scotch has helped
possibly
with the bitter pepper in the back of your throat. So I concur. Absolutely no change to the cigar. And let's go ahead and share. You know, we prep smoked for the show. I smoked more than you guys. I mean, I think I smoked like 8 of these or something.
That's dedication.
Well, it's dedication, but I mean, I got to do something with them anyway. And I thought, you know, I'm going to only smoke these in a row until my palate is used to it and see if my palate becomes more sensitive. Because if you smoke a delicious, nuanced cigar like a Koseka 151 or something, and then this, the contrast, you know, could affect my assessment. So all I smoked was these for a few days, like over the weekend. That's all I smoked. Every cigar that I smoked, I don't want to say boring, but same flavor pretty much all the way through. I do think in the final third that it changes a wee bit. So, you know, kind of my overall take on it, a lot of really good, famous, fancy, expensive cigars are one-note cigars.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad thing. So we're not... That is not a criticism. It is a critique. This is not a flavor changer. And the only thing that... the only negative I'll say is, like, the flavors that I'm getting, it's fine, but it kind of just tastes like a cigar. There's nothing, like, special. I don't really like the bitter pepper flavor, to be honest with you. It tastes like kind of mostly just like sweet tobacco.
Yep. Oh, wait, good band test.
Oh, yeah. A lot of our fathers come off well.
Great band test. I agree with you on the flavor aspect. The burning of the lips has now begun to subside, but I'm still, the pepper from the tobacco is still there, the note of that. It hasn't changed. I remember this from the first time. It's not going to change until you get to the last third. And then again, it's a slight change. You know, what you were saying about smoking that many back-to-back, there is an adage that you don't know a cigar until you smoke a whole box of it. Because your flavor palate, you are the inconsistent factor.
Right.
You smoke it the morning, the afternoon, the evening, you will have an entirely different experience based upon what you've eaten, how well hydrated you are, your time of day, your relaxation mode, who you're with, your environment, the music, so on and so forth. There are a million factors that will affect the flavor of a cigar. So smoking a whole box at different times of days gives you the full range of experience is the theory.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad one. Everybody should smoke more.
Sounds like a cigar company came up with that one.
Yeah.
Well, I do like to binge on cigars for that reason. And, you know, most of the time, by the time I get done with 10 or more, it's like making friends. I found the parts I like. I also found the parts I don't like. But I'm able to zone in on the enjoyable parts. What's interesting about this is the Peladoro tobacco, which, Angel, why don't you tell us a little bit about Peladoro?
Let me pull up my notes.
So, Peladoro is Spanish for silver pebble. It's Spanish for a whale's vagina. No, it means City of Angels. That's literally what it means.
Now you're mother. We're going to get
hate. I got to put Anchorman's picture up on the screen and hope we don't get a strike against us.
Right. So, pelo de oro means golden hair.
Golden hair. So, just, question. Like, if you had a blonde person, would you use that aphorism, pelo de oro?
I guess so. I've never heard it used that way.
How would you call a blonde person?
Rubia.
Okay.
Yeah, like Marco Rubio. Yeah, that's our term for blonde in Spanish.
Really? That struck me as that would be the redhead's term.
Yeah, he doesn't have fucking blonde hair. He needs to change his name.
But
dude, it's false advertising. Goddamn senators, they lie about everything.
Yes, sir. No, they're honest people. That's why we voted them in.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
Open up Cuba.
So one good thing Obama tried to do.
It was founded in Cuba. And the way it got out to the other America was obviously, like everything else, got snuck out.
Smuggled, yeah.
Yeah, because a thing happened.
In Cuba, yeah.
Yeah, because it works out so well, every time it gets appointed or used. Anyways, so it is an heirloom tobacco. Everybody got it out of Cuba after the revolution, you know, got grown. It was mostly grown in the DR, but it is something that is grown in Nicaragua and Costa Rica. So it was mostly like a coastal tobacco. So kind of like the Perla del Mar, you know, that tobacco, Pearl of the Sea. Hey, that's the one that we found closest to the coast. So that's what those both were. So it is a harder tobacco to grow because it is not hardy. So it has to be in like the very perfect environment, and it is not resistant to disease.
And let me rephrase that.
Yeah.
It is difficult to grow successfully because it is not robust.
Correct.
However, the upside is the leaves are very silky and thin and beautiful. That's the trade-off.
Yeah. So it is very gorgeous looking.
Is it golden?
It is a golden, like...
For a tobacco leaf.
Tobacco leaf. Like, it's on the more yellow side. So that's where it gets the pelo de oro. I don't know where the hair part came from. Maybe because it's fibrous. But I haven't seen an actual plant myself, so what it looks like.
Mine's not very veiny.
I've seen it on the internet, but I've never seen one in
person. Right. Like, I haven't even looked it up on the internet, so that's my fault for not looking at that image. But, like I said, this is... Nicaraguan pelo, I believe, from what they're describing on the website. So don't shoot.
Because they say it's a puro.
Right, it's a Nicaraguan puro. So it's pelo de oro grown in Nicaragua.
And interestingly, it's like filler tobacco.
Right.
Not the wrapper.
And it's mostly like five companies that have it because, like, again, it is super expensive and super hard to grow.
Do they make wrapper leaves out of it at all?
I'm not exactly sure, but there are a few companies that use them. Aging Room uses a binder and filler, so almost as a wrapper. So they have the Aging Room Pelo de Oro, which I'm not sure if you smoke. I think I might have smoked, but I'm pretty sure
I've never smoked it. No.
The Freud Alter Ego uses it, which I have never smoked.
I'm familiar with the cigar because it sounds like the name is cool, but I've never smoked that one either.
Same thing with Felipe Gregorio, Pelo de Oro, same thing, binder, filler. And then La Gloria Cubana, Pelo de Oro, or Corojo de Oro. So they used it as well, but in a Corojo.
So none of them, so it's not a wrapper leaf, apparently.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's too delicate and has holes and stuff in it.
I bet you, what was that one Opus X that was super thin on the wrapper?
Maybe it's a smaller leaf, too.
The 20th anniversary.
Yeah.
God
bless. I'd imagine that's what it would be like if you used it as a wrapper.
Yeah.
And you're probably correct. It's probably a smaller leaf.
Yeah.
And it's just so expensive. I think it's like, if somebody would want to use it as a wrapper.
Once you cut off the parts that you can't wrap with, then it becomes really chunky. Yeah, I can see that being a thing. So okay, interesting.
Interesting with being a Nicaragua puro. How anti-Nicaraguan it is.
Yeah. So that's the thing with Pelo de Oro. It's just very expensive, and if they're using it, it's intentional.
Yeah.
Very intentional.
Yeah, it's one of those tobaccos like Arapiraca or Peruvian, where I'm like, you did that on purpose. You didn't get a discount bundle or something to put that in.
Yeah, there's no way this is like, here, sell me this bundle because it's on wholesale.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's where the sweetness is coming from.
Probably.
So this isn't a sweet cigar. I want to make sure we're clear. Mm-hmm. It tastes like sweet tobacco, which, if you're familiar, is really reminiscent of, like, sweet hay, sweet grass. You know, it has a...
it's just sweet vegetation. Outdoor,
sweet vegetation. Yeah. I will say I don't detect any bitterness whatsoever. I didn't on any of these cigars. Not one little drop of bitter. But the pepper is bitter, and... You know, I think you made a great point, which is the experience on the back of the throat and the adenoids is not significantly different from just poorly aged tobacco, and that's a detractor, I think. Yes, cayenne pepper does have that little bitter flavor to it, and it really reminds me of cayenne, although it's not quite as hot.
Right.
But yeah, it does feel the same and taste the same on the back of your, really the hard palate in the back of your throat. Yeah.
This,
like,
does strike me as you know, another year's age. It's not going to add to the complexity, but it will take kind of that edge off of it. And it does have a little bit of an edge, which it doesn't quite fit the rest of the cigar.
So I'll give them this, like, the blend, I know everybody's blend is super intentional, but this, like, this is definitely that step up of, like, we did this on purpose.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out, Tom, because I'm setting a few aside.
Nice.
And,
set three.
Yeah, I'll we'll revisit it in a year.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so completely not cigar related to wrap up the show. Did you guys catch this year's season of Secret of Skinwalker Ranch?
I did.
Yeah.
So
we talked about it a lot.
Watched the wrap up episode last night.
Like, fucking the material they found in the mesa.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So first of all, it behaved like a superconductor at room temperature. We've been trying to make this material for years. And then the resistance, the heat resistance or thermal resistance to the liquid nitrogen.
Dig away the fucking hill. If you have to do it like an archaeologist with a toothbrush at a time.
I think that's what they're going to do. I think that's what they're going to do.
That's the answer.
Hopefully that's what they are.
I don't know what's going on in that ranch, but something is.
Because they said stop the drilling. We need a different approach. I think it's going to, they're going to do an archaeological type approach to it. But they need to fucking dig it out, whatever it is. So, if y'all aren't keeping up with this, basically what happened is they imaged a large anomaly and it's broken into pieces in the mesa. And 300 feet in the mesa, which geologists will tell you is very old.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they started digging these tunnels so that they could run sensors through them and try to figure out what was in between them.
X-ray the hill.
And as they're going through the spoils, they find these small pieces of ceramic. Now, this is combined with putting in these drill bits, you know, that they can drill through granite. And they're pulling the drill bit out and the tooth is like half gone.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like zero friction. Right, the teeth is still sharp, it's just chunked off, right? And it would make sense if they're trying to drill through ceramic where it's absorbing the friction, which is a big part of the operation for drilling.
And ceramic that has a pattern.
Yes, this is absolutely manufactured. Like, you can see the crosshatch pattern. Some things that set the ceramic apart as well is the presence of metals in it. We don't do that with our ceramics. And it attracted a rare earth magnet, and then when they pulled it apart, it now repelled the magnet.
Mm-hmm.
Flip it over, same thing, so it wasn't a pole reversal, and the only material we know that behaves that way is a superconductor. It resists the magnetic field. And so they tried to cool it down in liquid nitrogen, and the thermal efficiency basically boiled the liquid nitrogen for many minutes longer than it should have, longer than thermal tile on the space shuttle, and then after it was cooled down, they did a magnetic test, and it repelled the magnet like a superconductor would. So, fascinating material that we have been trying to make materials like this for decades and decades, and then we just find one buried underground.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, right? What it could be, but. Obviously manufactured. Oh, and then the other thing was the external side of it was coated in aluminum oxide, which is fascinating because that's the best material we found to coat spacecraft with.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's lightweight and it basically resists the radiation that you find in space that can really tear things up, right?
That show is interesting because it tests the boundaries of what we understand as physics.
Yep. So who knows what's going to happen? I mean, they're doing it right now, right? So the season is going to air next year, but whatever is going to air next year, they're actually doing it right now. They're probably wrapping up. It's getting to that time of year.
Just release it all.
Yeah, so they only film in the summer. What I want to hear is the guy that worked for the feds that had it for 20-some years before. I want to see that report.
All of which is still classified.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? Well, and so, you know, there's a lot of other weird shit going on in the show, but the probably the most challenging is that Dr. Travis Taylor's trailer, where he sleeps, has an air-gapped computer that is hardwired, not Bluetooth, hardwired to security cameras that basically face the outside of his trailer. Right? This is a security measure.
Old school hardwired suit.
Everything is hardwired. Well, somebody disabled the cameras, took all of that data and sent it somewhere, like to a USB drive. And of course, this is all registered. The problem is the commands to disable the cameras and upload the data happened more quickly than you can humanly do. Yeah, because you have to click on this box, type something in, click on this box, whatever. And all of this happened within, you know, microseconds of each other, which is indicative of a hacking program. But it's air-gapped, which means somebody would have to put a program, a hacking program, on a USB stick into the computer. The problem is the camera didn't record anybody coming in and doing this.
Right.
Right?
I think it's interesting, the direwolf carcass.
Well, then you have, you know, that's just fucking weird. And then they did a DNA test, and they're like, yeah, it's like 98% we don't know the DNA, but it's lupine of some kind. And then all of this, you know, being combined with the this idea of some kind of portal, it's like there are no wolf packs, period, in that part of Utah. Like, mm-hmm. Wolf packs don't exist in that area. Here's a wolf, but it's also a species that went extinct like 12,000 years ago, we think. Did it come through a portal? Is it just misplaced in time? Like, literally, it was just walking down the creek 12,000 years ago, and poof, here it is, right?
And what ate the coyote? Because nothing on this continent eats a coyote.
Uh-huh. Sounds like something a direwolf would do.
Yes, it does.
And they're back, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, interestingly, they did have... They've cloned two pups that are...
Three now. They cloned a female.
Three now? Yeah, mm-hmm. They're, you know, I don't know, 40% direwolf.
Well, it's interesting because I heard the guy on the podcast. What they did was they genetically manipulated a wolf to become a direwolf based on DNA extraction. As far as we can tell, these are direwolves. Like, they have the same genetic expression. And it's kind of weird because they came out snow white with these manes, big manes on their neck, and they're like 40% larger than a gray wolf. The carcass that they found on the ranch had a couple percentage points of red European red wolf, which... That's not even in the wolf population in the United States. And so it's really bizarre. Now, the only caveat that I'll give there is we found all kinds of extinct animals, like the coelacanth, thriving population off of Madagascar that supposedly went extinct 30 million years ago. And we don't know how they behaved. So maybe dire wolves don't travel in packs the way that modern wolves do. Maybe there is, you know, they survived and maybe inbred with some wolves in the wild and you get some gray wolf and you get some red wolf or something like that. Maybe it's just a species that survived, but, I mean, we have the science. We have the skull. We have the goop, the biological goop. We did the DNA testing. I think they need to get with the guys that cloned the dire wolf and compare the DNA that's in this carcass to whatever they cloned.
And I'm okay with cloning, but let's start with herbivores.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's stay away from the predators. We've all seen the movies. That doesn't work out so well.
Yeah, but herbivores aren't cool, dude. Yeah. You know? Yeah, like the aurochs. Dude, I mean, fucking, what was it, like 800 AD or something? It wasn't that long ago. They had these fucking cows that were the size of this room. They would plow. They'd eat them, you know. All right. Meanwhile, back in Cigar Land.
Yeah.
Don Pepin Garcia, Series JJ, 20th Anniversary, 2025. By the way, on the case, you'll notice, limited edition, 186 of 2,500. So there's only 2,499 left, because I have one of them. They are individually numbered, so it's kind of cool. And it's about time to rank this cigar, so We are not far enough in to really rank it, but we're up on time. And I think it's fair because we all already smoked the cigar, right? So, do you guys have any...
Final tasting notes?
Yeah, like final tasting notes before we go ahead and rank it.
Not really.
Yes.
Same cigar.
Exact same cigar.
Yeah, I do think that, like, the harshness has mellowed out some. The strength may be picking up. It feels like you could get a nicotine punch from this a little bit. Probably at a 6.5, something like that. So let's start with presentation. The cigar itself, beautiful. The everything about it, the cello didn't detract from it. The box is top-notch. Nothing beats it. The wrapper leaves, absolutely gorgeous. Corojo 99 Rosado, Sun Grown Rosado. I'm at a 10 for presentation. I don't see anything they could improve.
No, I agree, 10.
It's gorgeous.
10. Excellently done, as usual. So then, construction, other than slightly uneven burn lines for all of us, I didn't have any issues on any of the cigars I smoked. How about you guys? Yeah, good draw.
Yeah, very good draw, and slightly uneven.
Oh, well.
Burn, but nothing that you need to touch up about. Just below white ash, but, solid ash. It's overall very well built.
By the way, cool smoke.
Yeah, the temperature of the smoke
as far
is really
temperature,
cool.
It's cool.
So I'm kind of at a 10 for construction.
I agree.
I didn't have any issues in any of the box. So. All right, so that brings us to price, and I got a box discount. So let me see what...
it's got to be in the neighborhood of 20-ish.
Yeah. Let's see what, like, an individual Toro costs. So it looks like $22 is a average price that it's going for. All right, so... There's a few issues. I have a few issues with the price, right? And at $22, you're just competing against all kinds of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Casa Cuba that we smoked last year that got a great score, fantastic, delicious cigar. All kinds of Padrones, Plasencias, Fuentes, good cigars at $22. This doesn't hold up. And actually, I don't think this holds up against other My Father products. There's a lot of My Father products. La Gran Oferta, I mean, the name itself is like, hey, this is a deal. You know you're getting a deal. That's a better stick.
I think it's a great $16 to $17 cigar.
Yeah, I think I would pay that for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that $16 or $17 would be a 5. I think at $22, I'm like down in the 3 range.
I agree.
I think a 3.
Yeah.
I think so. I know the Peladoro or whatever made it more expensive.
Oh,
but
I agree.
But it didn't make it better.
Yeah.
You know, this cigar can't compete with other cigars in this
price. Yeah, two things that probably put it there is, like, the Peladoro and the fact that it's a limited.
I was going to say the fucking box.
Yeah.
That is an expensive box.
Yeah, we're paying, like, $2 for the box.
Yeah, and then, like, the single coffin... With the single Salamone.
Yeah, $2 is definitely for the box. The presentation.
Probably more than that. Who knows? All right, so that brings us to flavor. It's not a bad flavor, but also I can buy plenty of $9 sticks anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And sub-$9 sticks that blow this out of the water. It's really not intriguing, inviting, nothing that I would want to smoke again. It's blasé, and there's nothing in there. Like, there's people that like strong cigars, it's not strong. There's people that like mild cigars, it's not mild. There's that bitter pepper taste on the back of your palate. Honestly, I've got like a 2 for flavor. I don't know a lot of people in my circle of friends that are going to smoke this and be like, hey, that's tasty.
Yeah.
I want to try that again.
Yeah, it's definitely not bad, unfortunately. It's not that it's a bad stick, it's just...
Meh.
Yeah.
It's just meh. So, I don't know, where are you at for flavor?
I agree with what you just said, because I was honestly expecting a little bit more out of it,
mm-hmm.
and not really.
I think the niche for this cigar from a enjoyer and or trying to help others enjoy this cigar, somebody that smokes a normally like a 2 to 3 hour cigar that has, you know, it's a one note cigar, but it's Friday or Saturday night, they want to celebrate by getting something a little bit stronger, this would work.
Yeah. The problem is going from a Quorum to this and paying $22 mm-hmm. is a hard sell, I think.
I'd even say like from a champagne.
Or a champagne, yeah. Okay.
If somebody that likes a nice mild one-note cigar could do this on a Friday or Saturday night on a full belly, it wouldn't offend them. It would show them a little more strength.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
definitely not a breakfast cigar.
That's a narrow market.
Yeah. And again, you could buy 2 champagnes. So... Mm-hmm. You know. All right, so that brings us to experience. I like the artwork, and I'm going to save the box, and I'm going to save the Salamone. It's, to me, that's artwork. Beautiful cigar in its own coffin box. But other than that, it's too expensive to do anything with, and it's not nice enough to do anything nice with.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably gift the box to somebody, although they're not going to be super thrilled when they start smoking them and... They're kind of mid. The individual cigars, not really giftable. You know. So, I just don't know the use case for this cigar. I mean,
it's too expensive to do anything with.
It really is. You want to pay attention to it, but then pay attention to what?
Right, to what?
It's just like the same note over and over and whatever. So, a lounge smoker for sure, you know, at this price point. And then if money's no object, you could probably go golfing with it. It's not too strong for that.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I don't know. What am I missing?
I think you hit it right on
the nose. I think the only other niche this has is if you've already had one good cigar and you want to smoke something else and
mm-hmm.
might not care, but still want something of very pleasant quality.
Yeah, like it's well made.
But the flavor, you know, second cigar is, you know,
you're already ashed out,
yeah. So.
Like your palate's already dry. But then the price gets in the way.
It does.
$22, it's like, you know. So I mean, I'm kind of at like a 3 for experience. It's definitely below average.
Yeah.
Overall, because if it didn't have beautiful packaging and everything else wasn't wonderful about it, I don't know that I'd even give it a 3 because it still comes down to the flavor and the experience, and it's.
Yeah.
Missing a lot of points.
Yeah, we review all this stuff because it does affect the experience, the overall experience. Like, but if you took the band off and you picked it up off a jar off the counter, you know, would you pay $22 for it? No. I mean, you'd have people lined up, Tom, you fucking scoundrel, how dare you?
Mm-hmm.
This is a $4 smoke. You know? All right, so that brings the total score to 28. Not a great showing. But I will note the perfect scores for presentation and construction, kind of as usual,
mm-hmm.
to be honest with you. And there you have it, the Dom Pepin Garcia Series JJ 20th Anniversary 2025. And, you know, the only thing I can say is I'm setting the rest of these aside in the humidor and I'll put a year on them and hopefully we come back and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And if it's not, well, then it's not.
Yeah,
you know, but as far as getting the first... release.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's only one, but, you know, first box to hit the shelves and smoking it pretty quick, not impressive.
Yeah.
So, appreciate the artwork, but it's back to the drawing board with the blend, and better luck next time. That's all from us at Burn Line Podcast. Thank you for joining us. We will see you again next week.